Okay, so continuing electronics, and we are still going on the chapter 19, which is about the bipolar junction transistors. So the same way as the field effect transistor chapter, this chapter is as well quite long and also quite important for the course. So where we left off last time was the example of this common emitter amplifier, where we had added an emitter resistor. And last time we ended analyzing the biasing point or the quiescent point for that circuit, where we saw that these biasing points or the operating point for the collector voltage and the collector current becomes less dependent on the transistor current gain when we have this RE resistor in place. Now we will continue going to the small signal model, so the AC signal part, and analyze how this circuit will behave in respect to this AC signal. Similar way, what we did in the previous example for the similar for the small signal equivalent circuit. On the base side, we had these two resistors, R1, R2, which were connected in this voltage division configuration from the supply, from the VCC supply voltage in DC mode. But now that we are talking about this AC mode, as I've discussed earlier, from the point of view of the AC signal, the supply voltage, the DC supply voltage can be considered as ground. So that's why we can kind of connect both of these. So one was already from the base to ground, but the other one was from base to the supply, and that supply end can be turned into this reference voltage in this AC picture. So that's why we have now the R1 and R2 in parallel on this base side. Then we have the transistor, and here we use the simple case or simple model for the transistor, the H parameter model, where we have this input resistance, H parameter in the H parameter model, it's HIE. Then we have the current gain part. It's now in this case, we have given it as the GM times VBE, so the transconductance times VBE. It could be as well this HFE times IB. They are both equivalent, so either way. But now we are kind of considering this V, so base to emitter voltage and this GM. But we could as well make the analysis using this IB, either way. Then we have this output admittance or output resistance of the transistor. And now what makes this kind of a little bit more complicated than in the previous picture is that now we have this RE here connected between the emitter and the ground. So now this makes this model a little bit more complicated to analyze. And on the collector side, again, the same way as what we have on the base side, we have this RC resistor, which was originally connected between the collector and the supply voltage, and now from in the AC picture we can connect it and turn it like this, so it's between the base and the reference. So this is the small signal model for that circuit that we had in the previous slides on the previous on Monday. And now there are some assumptions that we make. that if you assume that okay, this VPE is quite small, and moreover we have the same kind of idea that we had in the small signal model for the MOSFET, and also in the DC model as well, that basically if we consider that the VBE, the change in the base voltage and emitter voltage, they kind of go together because we have this RE here. So if we change this here, this kind of changes more or less the same way. So the VPE hence is quite very small. It's not zero, but it's small, and that's why we can kind of consider that this base voltage and emitter voltage are more or less equal. But we still have some non-zero VBE voltage, because that when we have this non-zero VBE voltage, we have non-zero collector current, which of course is needed in order to be. But so it just makes our calculations and the analysis easier when we do this, that VE and is roughly equal to VB. It's not exactly equal, but roughly equal. So we can kind of make the calculations and the equations a little bit easier. And then we assume that the VB is equal to VI. So again, if I go back here, this point here, if we assume that we are the frequency of the signal that we are interested in is high enough, so that this the impedance of this capacitor is low enough, so that basically this the time constant of this R1, R2 parallel configuration and the C is high enough in respect to the frequency, then base voltage is the same as the input voltage. So those are the assumptions that we start from. Well, there also on the output side, basically we can do this assumption, or it's not even an assumption, it's the fact that the output voltage is minus IC times RC. So if we go back again, so the collector current that flows into the collector, this picture, it flows through the RC and it goes from top from bottom to top, which means that there is the output voltage is minus IC times RC. So again, we are talking about inverting amplifier setup. And then from the previous knowledge that we can assume that IC and IE are quite close to each other. So they are not, so we have this beta value that dictates the dependence between base and collector current, and usually that current gain is high numbers, so 100, 200 or so, then we can make this assumption that the emitter current is very close to collector current. And on the other hand, we can say that the emitter current is actually the emitter voltage divided by the emitter resistor. And from there, we can kind of jump to the conclusions that, okay, if that is so, then we have, because the emitter voltage was considered that it's very close to the base voltage, which is very close to the input voltage, then we have this, in the end, we get this value. So there are some assumptions that are made along the way, namely starting from this, then in the end we can jump some of the if we would make a really accurate analysis, we would get pretty much in the same ballpark estimate. There would be plus minus percent or less accuracy if you would make a really accurate analysis. So all in all, this thing gives us the voltage gain for this circuit, which in the end is minus RC divided by RE. And now both of these are external resistors defined by the user, and we don't have any dependence on the actual transistor in this case. So basically, we have exactly the same situation as we what we had for the field effect transistor amplifier circuit that we used earlier. We had the drain resistor and the source resistor. So now we have the collector and emitter respectively. So now we can control the voltage gain. However, as you can see from here, that we have the values of the resistors are in this case is they are close to each other. So we have 2.2 kilo ohm and 1 kilo ohm. So in the end, we have the voltage gain is only about 2. So minus in front because we are talking about inverting, but the absolute value for gain is only 2. So it only doubles the amplitude of the signal, which is, of course, in some cases okay, but then in some cases you would like to have higher gain. And with this setup, the main, exactly the same reasons that we had for the MOSFET is in here that with this emitter resistor, well, first of all, we can, because it makes this negative feedback to the input signal, which was the V. Without RE, we have the input signal is simply VBE, so the base to emitter voltage. Now it reduces to just the VB. So we can get rid of the parameter variability dependence of the transistor, both in DC and AC picture. But more important usually is to get that control in the DC so that the operating point is not dependent on the current gain of the transistor, which we saw in the previous, what we did in the last lecture. That even though the current gain was changing from 80 to 350, our collector voltage and the collector current were changing just in the order of 1 or 2%. So that is the main control. But of the hindsight is this reduction of the gain of the voltage gain of the amplifier, which is, of course, we have, when we talk about amplifiers, we usually like to have the high gain as possible. So that is kind of the pros and cons. So, but now how to, so if we, just a reminder that if we wouldn't have the feedback, we have this is roughly the voltage gain. So GM times RC. So important difference between the one without feedback and one with feedback is that we have, like I said, control over the characteristics of the amplifier. And without feedback, it's basically it's up to the transistor parameters, more or less. Okay, so here is the more detailed analysis that I was mentioning. So if we go through, so now we are still neglecting the effect of the transistor output resistance, so the part of this 1 over HOE and the base current. So we assume that the base current, the IB current, is much less than the emitter current. So we are talking about factor of 100 or 200. This is a valid assumption. Also, what we learned in the previous examples that this was much higher than the resistor outside. So we are talking about 100 kilo ohm or more for these, and we are talking about kilo ohm range resistors for RE and RC. So in that picture, this can be kind of forget forgotten. So if we would go a little bit more precise, so the output voltage would be GM times VBE, which is in the small signal model. So this GM times VBE is the collector current. Okay. And on the other hand, the input voltage is actually VBE plus VE, and not exactly the just we were assuming or approximating that V input is roughly this VE. Okay. And so if we now ignore the effects of this 1 over HOE and IB, so we can then get that the emitter voltage is the collector current times the emitter resistor. And then when we plug this in the previous equation, we have the input voltage VBE plus this term. And we have now VBE here. And if we just rearrange all these, we get VBE is input signal or input voltage divided by 1 plus GMRE. And now if we plug all this into this, so what is the output versus input, we get this kind of equation, which is more accurate. However, when we now again rearrange this, so we take this GM term here and we kind of separate it in the denominator, we have RE plus 1 over GM. So this GM is usually some big number, transconductance. So 1 over GM is a small number in respect to this RE term. So we taking this out, we are back to the one that we got in the previous analysis when we did all the assumptions. And so without any assumptions, we kind of get more accurate, but the difference is this term. And as said, it only makes some 1% or less difference in this value for the voltage gain. Then about the other characteristics of this circuit. So the input resistance of the small signal input or the small signal model. So if you look into the base of this BJT, then we have this transistors input resistance. And on the other hand, the emitter resistance that is there, it shows from the base side, it shows as a larger resistor because we have this current not only flowing from the base, but also from the emitter to the and that's why effectively looking from the base, this emitter resistor is kind of multiplied by a factor of this HFE, which is the current gain of the transistor. So the transistor's own junction resistance, the PN junction resistance is relatively small in comparison to this because we are talking about kilo ohm range resistor for RE and HFE is 100 or 200. So we are talking about 100 to 200 kilo ohm resistor effectively looking into the base. So that is the BJT part. But then if you think about the amplifier, so input resistance of the amplifier, there are these two resistors or three resistors in place. So we have this R1, R2, which are the external resistors, and then we have this RB, which is effectively the BJT's input resistance. And they are all parallel to each other. And now looking into this, that this is some 100 or 200 or 300 kilo ohm, and we having these are some tens of kilo ohm. Then when they are all parallel, in the end, we can kind of get, we don't need to worry about this RB. So in the end, this input resistance of the whole amplifier circuit in the small signal model is more or less defined by the external resistors, R1 and R2. And then the output resistance is pretty much similar what we had for the common emitter amplifier. So it's this RC in parallel with the 1 over HOE, which becomes this more or less the same as, so the RC is smaller than 1 over HOE. So when they're in parallel, then it's effectively more or less the RC value. Then the same way that we had in field effect transistors, we can use this kind of decoupling capacitor in the emitter. So for DC, so when we add this capacitor in the emitter, which is kind of shunting or bypassing the emitter resistance at high frequencies, for DC, the analysis is still the same, because for DC, the impedance of the capacitor is infinite, so we can kind of just forget that. So this means that with this RE resistor, we can get control on the biasing point and the operating point of this circuit. So the collector current and the collector voltage are more or less set by the RE and RC values, and also the R1 and R2 values. But when we select the value for the capacitor in a certain way, and of course we need to take into account this capacitor as well in the input, but meaning that considering some high values of frequency, we can consider these capacitors as short circuits, or the impedance is so small in respect of the resistors that in the emitter side we are kind of back to the picture of the common emitter amplifier, where we didn't have any emitter resistance. So the small signal model kind of reduces to the one where we don't have anything on the emitter. So basically it becomes this. So now we have the transistor the same way that we had in the simplest common emitter amplifier. So we don't have this emitter resistor or emitter capacitance, because effectively the impedance of this thing here, this parallel configuration with these two components at those frequencies that we are considering for the small signal model, we can kind of have that as a zero resistance or zero impedance, meaning that we are short circuiting the emitter in the AC picture to the ground and getting into this. And now for this, obviously the voltage gain is back to this minus GM times RC, or RC over RE, which is So it's back to the from the AC point of view, with this decoupling capacitor, this this amplifier is back to the picture where we are dependent. The voltage gain is dependent on the transistor characteristics. So here it's illustrated that how it works. So on top we have the common emitter amplifier without the emitter resistor. So now this is the one that we were dealing with in the beginning. So we didn't have any emitter resistance. So that the biasing point for that circuit is dependent on the transistor characteristics, which is of course something that may pose a problem in some cases. Then we added this feedback with using this emitter resistance. So what happened basically was that we reduced the gain and increased the bandwidth of this system. So you are back to this picture that the bandwidth is defined by the transistor, so the internal capacitances. So we have these junctions, PN junctions, that have some capacitance just by their structure, and at high enough frequencies they start to be attenuation. So basically the characteristic is something like this, so that it's kind of an envelope curve that we need to follow, which is dependent on the any given transistor. But when we add this emitter resistor, it adds this negative feedback. So, and what the negative feedback makes is that it reduces the gain and increases the bandwidth. So similarly, what we had for the operational amplifier discussion earlier. However, so the gain that we have, or the good thing that we have from here, is that the biasing point and the operating point is now more stable. But then of course the gain is reduced, and sometimes you are not happy with that. So in order to get kind of bypassing that, is that we have this emitter resistor and decoupling capacitor. So the last picture that I showed, that at low frequencies from zero to certain frequency, we are following this line. But then at high enough frequencies, the decoupling capacitor starts to, the impedance of the decoupling capacitor starts to go lower and lower. And at some point, the impedance of that decoupling capacitor is much, much smaller than the resistance of the emitter resistance or resistor. So then we are back to the picture and behavior of the common emitter amplifier, where we don't have any. So effectively, this looks like that we don't have, for those frequencies, that we don't have any emitter resistor. And at high enough frequencies, then the capacitors, the transistor internal capacitors, they are kicking in the behavior, and we are back to this. So this part cannot be controlled by the external capacitors or resistors. So that is fixed. But this part is defined by the external resistors and capacitors. So these are the kind of the tricks that you can get kind of the good things from both worlds, so to speak. That the DC is now well behaving, so the operating point is well behaving regardless of the current gain of the transistor, and we get relatively high gain. So the maximum gain that what we can get from that transistor is for those frequencies that you define by the external components. Obviously, this value or this level here can vary and varies with the transistor. So if you take several transistors, this can be current gain of 80 is somewhere, and if you have a current gain of 350, it's 4 times higher, or more than 4 times higher. So that then you don't have the control over that, which is of course in some applications can be a problem, but and then depends. But then still, if you want to have highest gain you could possibly have, then you have to, there's some compromise that you need to make. Okay, the frequencies for this picture, so the C0 here, kind of frequency here, is set by the emitter capacitor and the emitter resistor, and the external emitter resistance and the transistor's emitter resistor, which is this basically the current or the transconduct 1/transconductance. And typically this is smaller than the external resistor, so that's why this parallel configuration here is roughly simply this transistors like 1/transconduct. And the F1, so when you start going up here, so this kind of transition frequency is simply given by this external resistor and capacitor that you put in there. And here, the increase from this cutoff frequency to here was because of that negative feedback, which we were discussing in length already in part A. Well, then there are of course all kinds of tricks and ways of using these behaviors. So one way is to split. To use a split emitter resistors. So in some cases you would like to have some control. So first of all, or full control still for the DC part, so the operating point, but then you would like to have more control over your AC voltage gain. So now if you split the emitter resistors in this way and have the emitter capacitor parallel to only some portion of the emitter resistor, then you have somewhat more control over the gain of that band where we, so at higher frequencies this capacitor only kind of reduces or gets rid of one portion of this emitter resistance. So then you have there you have the voltage gain becomes RC divided by RE1 practically. Minus, of course. You always need to remember that this is inverting amplifier. Okay. So other amplifier configuration. So we have been considering the first and the most typical one, which is taking the output from the collector, which is the common emitter amplifier. That's the simplest form. But now if we can also take the output from the collector, So that is called the we are taking from the emitter and using the so-called common collector amplifier. So now we are considering that the output is from the emitter, input is on the base, and if you think that the, what's the reference for base and the emitter, that's the collector. So it's common for both input and output. And what this makes, again, this is very similar treatment and idea what we had for the field effect transistor. We had where we had this common drain configuration where we took the output from the source, where the, so there was the source resistor. So now we have just bipolar transistors. Now we are talking about emitter and collector and base. So again, the same kind of idea is that the base and emitter, from the small signal point of view, they are very similar. So they follow each other. So the input goes up, output goes up. And the output is the amplitude is very similar. So here is the illustration of a simple simulation that input is going up and down with an amplitude of 1 volt, roughly. We have here, there's a certain DC level. So it's not at the same level, but the amplitude is more or less the same. So we have almost the same amplitude in both cases, input and output. And the one notable thing is that the phase is, so now we are talking about non-inverting amplifier. And for this configuration, the voltage gain is roughly one. The input resistance is again set by this R1, R2, which is on the base side, and the output resistance is more or less the 1 over GM or RE resistor. Then another is common base resistor, amplifier. And again, we are talking about non-inverting amplifier. And now it's a little bit different from the previous. So now we have the input is in the emitter actually, and output is from the collector, and the base is common. And now you can see that there is this capacitor again here, because we are talking about, we have some AC signal that is kind of fluctuating here. It needs to fluctuate this point. So we have some current fluctuations here, so that it induces some fluctuation in the collector current as well with this HFE or beta factor. And what we get out is that we get output voltage is fluctuating. And we have a non-inverting amplifier in this case again. So maximum in the input. So in this case, this is some generic simulation. 1 volt, 1 millivolt amplitude input, we get some almost 200 millivolt output voltage. So for this, the input resistance is now the transistor's emitter, the dynamic emitter resistor. Output is the collector resistor. And you can see here that the voltage gain is the absolute value is actually the same what you have for common emitter amplifier, but now we don't have the minus here. So that is the difference. So we have the non-inverting amplifier by using this common base configuration. The problem or the this advantage for this common base amplifier is that it is characterized by relatively low input resistance. So this RE is typically fairly low and relatively high output resistance. So we are talking about kilo ohm range usually. And as you remember, that amplifiers, usually a good amplifier, it's supposed to have high, relatively high input resistance and relatively low output resistance. So this is kind of the wrong way in a sense. So you wouldn't necessarily use this as a good voltage amplifier because of those reasons. But this could be used as this configuration could be used as a transimpedance amplifier, meaning that we have the transimpedance amplifiers, they turn the current into voltage. So for that purpose, this type of common base amplifier is useful for. So in some applications, the signal that you are dealing with, the input signal is actually voltage, and you turn with this, you amplify that, and or you turn it into voltage, and then you have also an amplification, at the same time. Okay, the summary for these amplifiers, different configurations. So common emitter, common collector, and common base. So the input terminal in common emitter is the base. Common collector is also the base, and common base configuration has the input as emitter. And output is collector or emitter for common collector configuration and collector for common base. So I'm not going to into detail of all of these, but this just summarizes what we just discussed in the previous slides. And most notably that the common emitter is inverting and the two others are non-inverting amplifiers. Okay, then, so far we discussed about just a single amplifier stage. So we had one transistor, one input, and one set of resistors, setting the biasing point and so on. But as mentioned earlier, that you many times the amplifiers, like operational amplifiers and other type of amplifiers, the amplification is not done in one step or one stage. So you usually have two or more stages that kind of take care of the input, and then you have the if you have three stages, you have the input stage that kind of takes care of that the amplifier, the setup or the system, amplifier system has relatively high input resistance or input impedance. That stage doesn't necessarily amplify the signal yet too much. There might be some amplification, but that's quite moderate. The next stage takes care of the amplification. So there might be a huge amplification in that part. And it doesn't need to worry about too much about the input and output resistances, because it's, of course, that needs to be taken into account so that all the stages don't affect too much to each other. But when that's there, you have the design. You are designing the whole system, and you don't need to take into account that what are outside of that amplifying system. And then the third stage, that is usually the output stage, that takes care of the so that the amplifier system has relatively low output impedance. And of course, you could have as many as possible of these stages. So it's depending on what you want to do and how these things. But you can work with two stages. So you can have two stages and take care of the input resistance and so high input resistance and low output resistance by two stages. So depending on the application and the requirements. However, now the question comes that the biasing point of one stage, one transistor, you have these currents flowing in to the collector base and so on. Then when you add another stage, if you don't decouple it from the DC point of view, then you have to take into account that stage as well. But however, if you do it like this, like in the picture, you use this so-called AC coupled amplifiers all the way, and you have always this capacitor that is in the middle, so that it limits the DC signal between. So all the DC parts of all the stages are separated from each other. Then you don't need to worry about that part in the DC point analysis. So you can do all the separated analysis for all of them. You'll get collector currents, collector voltages, and so on. And only the AC travels through this this cascade. It's of course there are the problem if that if you add these capacitors, you always have some low frequency cutoff that limits the low frequency response of the amplifier. So each of them adds to the total picture, and it might be problematic in some cases if you you cannot work at low frequency. So you have to have high frequency signal in order to. So in some applications, you would like to have also the low frequency part amplified. So these capacitors are not always welcome there. So, and of course the capacitors in when manufacturing these type of amplifiers, you typically are doing them integrated circuits. So you're not doing them in a breadboard, putting actual capacitors and resistors and so on. So in integrated circuits, the capacitors, they take quite a lot of space, which you would like to avoid. So instead of using coupling capacitors between all the stages, you can, when being carefully, designing carefully this, then you can make it also like this. So you have two stages, but now you need to take into account in the biasing point analysis, you need to take into account the next stage, and also in the amplification, you need to take the kind of the connection between stages so that they are not separated from each other. And here's an example how to kind of get this analyzed. So now we have this two states amplifier. In the first transistor, we have the same kind of idea that what we had in the previous. So we have this emitter resistor there. So we have control on the biasing point. So the C1 point here is controlled, and it looks familiar. But the next one, the collector voltage here acts as the voltage for the base of the next transistor. So now we have to take that into account when we deal with the second transistor analysis and how it looks like. So let's see the first the quiescent output voltage. So what is the DC part of the output voltage over here? And then the small signal voltage gain of the whole thing. So how it looks like. So the collector voltage for the first stage transistor. So first of all, the base voltage. If we again we make the assumption of that we did in the previous analysis as well, in the kind of the simplified case where we assume that the base current here is relatively small. So we don't have to take into account when we analyze or estimate the base voltage. So we can simply take this voltage division from here to get the VB voltage, like done here. So we have VB1 is about 3 volts. A more accurate way would be to build a Thevenin's equivalent circuit here, and then taking into account the base current that flows here, and then it's multiplied by the factor of beta, and then the VB is something, and we have this RE, and we could get more accuracy, but of course it would take more lines on the paper to calculate. We could get that out. It would be the same as in the previous. So the accuracy would be again in the order of a few percent or so. So making life easier, we assume that this base current is relatively small, and we can kind of forget that from here. So 3 volts in the base of first transistor, and then we can estimate from there what is the emitter voltage on the first transistor. And again, we are assuming that this base to emitter PN junction is forward biased, so that there is current flowing at about 0.7 volts. So the PN junction is forward biased, and we have this PN this diode equation estimated with this simple diode behavior. So 0.7 volts. So we have the emitter voltage is 0.7 volt lower than the base volt. So 2.3 volts is on the emitter. Then from there we can estimate the collector current, which again we make the assumption that the collector current is much greater than the base, and so about 100 times higher. So an emitter current same way. So this assumption can be made. So we can get from there that the collector current and the emitter current are in the order of 2.3 milliamps, which then gives us the collector voltage that from the supply. We have the collector voltage flowing through the resistor on the collector of the first transistor, and we get that that's about 3.1 volt. So if you go back here, in that point, we assume that the current that flows from the supply of and through this RC1 resistor. And at this point, we have collector current for the first transistor and the base current for the second transistor. And here we make the assumption that this base current here is much smaller than this current that flows here. That's why we can make that. So we get this 3.1 volt here, making that assumption. So those are the assumptions that we make in order to make these analyses more simple. Okay, and now we know the collector voltage for the first one, which makes that we know we have an estimate for the base voltage for the second transistor. And that means that we can have an estimate on the emitter voltage for the second, because we have this 0.7 volt reduction voltage drop in the base to emitter voltage. So we have 2.4 volts on the emitter of the second one. And same kind of assumptions made for the second transistor, that the collector current is approximately the same as the emitter current, giving us 1.2 milliamps of collector current in that case. And then from there, we can get the output DC point, or the operating point, which is the collector current for the second transistor. It is from the supply. That collector current is flowing through this RC2 resistor, and we get about 5.2 volts of voltage. So now we know where we are with all the voltages and currents in these transistors. And as you can note from here, that at no place we need the current gain of the transistor, because we have these RE resistors here that kind of takes care of that. That only thing is that the only thing that we need to know about that current gain is that the value is high. So that is the requirement, that the beta value or the HFE value is high. So we have this beta 1 current and beta 2 current are much smaller than the collector currents, and that's the only assumption that which leads us to these simplified equations and these assumptions. So if that is not the case, then this doesn't hold. But usually, as we know, the current gain is in the order of 100 or 200 or more. So it should be valid. And the voltage gain for this amplifier circuit is now, because we have now two inverting amplifiers. So the first one is inverting the signal, so we have 180 degree phase shift. And the second one is doing the same, so we have in the end minus times minus. And the first state has an amplification of RC over RE, and the same for the next one. So these ratios, so again, we don't have any dependence on the characteristics of the transistors. Of course, our voltage gain of 6 is not that high, but it's still controlled by the user, by these RC and RE values, not the transistor. So further assumptions are that needs to be valid is that the output resistor of the first one, so the RC1, which is the output of the first amplifier stage in the small signal model, so that is the RC1, it needs to be much smaller than the input resistance of the second one, which is practically the current gain times the RE, so the emitter resistance of the second one, so that the loading effects can be ignored in order to get this. And typically this is fulfilled. So we are talking about kilo ohm range resistors for RC and RE, and then this HFE, as said, is in the order of 100. So we have about 100 times difference between the output of the first and the input of the second. So it kind of fulfills the assumptions, and we are good to go. Okay, then some special transistors, bipolar transistors. So one thing is so-called Darlington transistor. And so Darlington pairs, or Darlington in general, it's a method of combining two or more transistors in so-called Darlington connection, which is illustrated in the next slide. And the current gain of the first transistor is multiplied by that of the second transistor. And in the end, this combination, it seems like a single transistor, which has the HFE seemingly as a product of these two transistors. So we can effectively, that those two transistors look like one transistor with a large current gain. And how it looks like, it looks like this. And I'm sorry about, again, this small picture. Now I can zoom in. I hope this shows to you. So these come, of course, you can make them yourself if you want. So you take two NPN transistors, for example, and make this on a breadboard, and you can get effectively a large gain, current gain transistor. But you can get these out of the box. So Darlington transistors are on the shelves. And of course, with those, you have more, they are better controlled, all the parameters and so on. And of course, they are smaller. But if you look at these circuits or sub-circuits of this, so first one, so this is kind of the generic, so this works. The idea is that when we have base current flowing in to this first transistor, then, well, first of all, you have to have this base to emitter voltage of the total, if you think about this as a single transistor, so this from the voltage from potential between this point and this point needs to overcome two PN junctions. So it needs to be one more than 1.4, roughly more than 1.4 volts in order to be. We have 0.7 volts and 0.7 volts, in total 1.4 volts. In order to have this base current flowing first, the first transistor, and what it does is that we have a certain current gain for the first transistor. Generates a collector current for the first transistor, which then induces and has a emitter current, which is the sum of base and collector, so roughly the collector current of the first one, and that is the base current for the second one. And of course, if we have 100 times here, so this current is multiplied by 100, then we have here is already the base of the second transistor is 100 times from the first one. And then the second one have, again, a factor of 100. Then in total, we are having from the total collector current that is flowing to this system is 10,000 times the base current that is flowing. So 100 times 100. So that is kind of the idea of this. The problem with this generic picture is that if you cut the current quickly, then you might have some charge left here, which is still kind of, the problem is that it might leave this open for a longer period. This the second transistor. So you don't have, so the first transistor is closed, so there's no current flowing, but there are some charge depending on the size. So there's some capacitance associated with the geometries. So there's some charge that is kind of slowly leaking through here and multiplied because of this transistor, and there's some current flowing here, and it's not proportional to this this input anymore. So that can make a problem in high speed applications. And to resolve that problem, adding a resistor here on the base of the so between the base and the emitter of the second transistor, is that if we close this the first transistor quickly and the remaining charge is kind of leaked, not through the PN junctions but through this resistor here, so that we close the whole transistor setup more quickly to that. So that's why that resistor is introduced there. So here's one example how to use Darlington transistor. So we can use it for example, a unity gain buffer. So we are taking this common collector configuration, and in some cases you would like to have a really high input resistance. You would require a really high input resistance, and with this the gain is one, but the advantage is that you have a really high input resistance using this setup. So basically the analysis would go exactly the same that we did for the common collector configuration a few slides back, and we get the same values, but now we have the input resistance is basically, we can use this really, really high resistors here, because we only need small current flowing here in order to keep to have the biasing point here at the certain level. So that's the good thing for this. Then one thing is that the same, well, kind of same way as for MOSFET, we can use this kind of complementary configurations, that not to use only NPN transistors, but using a combination of NPN and PNP transistors, and still have this Darlington effect. So the multiplication of two current gains. And it's called the complementary Darlington connection, or the Chiclay connection. Again, it acts as a single high gain transistor. And the advantage of this that is that now we have from the base side, if you look into the base, we have only one PN junction between the base and emitter of this setup. So only this 0.7 volt over here, which is of course usually in some cases you would like to have that lower threshold voltage for the input in order to get this biased in a right operating point. And here the idea is that you have the base current of the first transistor generates a collector current the same way as normally, but that collector current is now the base current for the second transistor, which is the PNP transistor, where the currents are flowing, where the NPN transistor, the base, is flowing in to the transistor. In PNP transistor, the base current is flowing out from the transistor. So now we have this behavior, and actually if you think closely and remember how the terminals for transistors were named, this where the arrow is for this transistor is actually the emitter, because that's the emitter of the majority carriers for for that transistor. So it's the holes that are moving in from the. So this collector here is just effectively, this looks like a single transistor. So positive current flowing in to this emitter of this PNP transistor and through this collector here. But all in all, we have two currents summed here. So here is some collector emitter current flowing from the first transistor, and then we have emitter current or the collector current of the PNP transistor, and they are summed here. So somewhat smaller current here and big larger current from here. Okay, then applications. So the same way that we had for the field effect transistors, we can use these bipolar transistors in many, many ways, not only for amplifiers, but also we can, for example, use them as constant current sources. So we can use them as a current sink. So meaning that if we set this setup, so R1, R2 sets the base current actively, then, and we have this RE here, then no matter what's the load, of course there are some limits, it cannot be whatever, but from very small to certain high value, of course if you put mega ohms or giga ohms, then you start having problems, but within a certain range from very low values to some high limit, the current flowing through this load is not determined by the load itself, but the rest of the circuit. So the transistor and namely the resistors over here. And then we could make current source using a PNP transistor. So here we have NPN on the left and PNP on the right. And that this is now current source. So difference between source and sink. So in sink, the load is connected to a supply, positive supply, and we are drawing the current through the load from the supply, and so we are kind of sinking and sucking the current, positive current through the load. Where in the current source, basically the idea is the same. So no matter what's the load here, we have the constant current, which is determined by these R2, R1, and RE. And in low in current source, we are putting positive current through the load. So load is now connected to the ground or the reference, and we are pushing current through it and not kind of pulling it out. So that's the difference between sink and source. And the same way what we had for MOSFETs, we can use bipolar transistors as current mirrors. So very similar idea that we have two transistors where we have from the supply to the first transistor, we have a certain resistor that through which the current is flowing. Then we have current collector current of the first is determined by the voltage and the current to the base of that transistor, and determined by this current gain of this transistor and the resistor over here. And changing this R, we change this current flowing through. And because when we do this, of course, this requires that this T1 and T2 are more or less identical. So the current gains and the voltage thresholds and those, everything is more or less equal. So it might not be, you can make them from discrete parts, but usually you have these in the integrated circuits and within integrated circuits so that you have the control over all the parameters. But anyhow, so you have this current flowing into the base or bases of these two transistors, and it's divided to two branches. And as long as this voltage here is above 0.7 volts roughly, then you have current flowing to the base of both transistors, and you have the current flowing through the collector. And because the second one is the collector of the second one is connected to the load, and the current is basically determined solely by this the T1 part. Basically the same ideas that we have for the field effect transistor current mirrors. And what's the beauty of this is that we can use a single transistor as the base or the kind of the basis of the current mirror, and we could reflect that mirror, that current to several branches. So we can add several this point to several bases of different of transistors, and we can get kind of multiplied the current in different places of the circuit. So this is really useful for these kind of complex amplifier circuits where we have several stages, for example, and we would like to have control of the biasing points of the circuit so that they are fully controlled by a single. You don't have to kind of design and how to say define for each of them individually, but do it in one place, and then you kind of just multiply it in different parts of the circuit. Then this is very useful and very much used in operational amplifiers, for example. And again, very similarly to what we had for MOSFET, we can use these bipolar transistors as differential amplifiers. So we now put two of these common emitter amplifier stages back to back, so that we have RC on both sides, and we have common emitter resistor, which basically sets the biasing point. And so we have inputs of one and two, and then we have outputs three and four, and we have a so-called long tail pair again. So very similar what we had for the field effect transistor. And very similarly, what we had there is that the voltage gain is now minus GM times the RC in the MOSFET case. We had minus GM times RD, so the drain resistor. Now it's the collector resistor. And then we have this parameter or the factor that is associated with differential amplifiers, the CMRR, so common mode rejection ratio. If you go through the analysis, we are not going into details, but it's just given here. It is dependent on in this picture here, when we have this RE here, then it reduces to that CMRR is GM times RE. So of course the goodness of a differential amplifier is determined by the value of the CMRR. So higher the CMRR value is, the better differential amplifier we have. And now that it's dependent on this RE, we would like to increase this RE as much as possible. But of course, the problem becomes that if we like put it too high, so a mega ohm and so on, then the biasing point over here, and it will start reducing the current flowing through the collectors, and it will start having problems with the operating point of these two transistors, which is of course not desirable. So what we can do is that we replace that RE resistor, actually we reduce that with the constant current source. So in this case, we put a current mirror there, which kind of draws some current from the emitters of these two transistors, and hence it kind of we can control with this external transistor and resistor setup the biasing point, and we don't have to worry about, and it's there and well under control. And the other thing is that effectively now the current source, constant current source that we have, effectively that has really high resistance or impedance. So because the constant current source is nearly independent on the voltage, meaning that delta I versus delta V is small, which means that effectively the resistance is very high, because resistance is delta V divided by delta I. So that means that then this current source makes this differential amplifier much, much better, because the CMRR value for the factor increases due to that fact. Remember that the ideal current source has an internal resistance of infinite. So if you have ideal current source, then no matter what voltage is across it, it always produces the same current. So that's why it's always infinite. But in reality, there is some, of course, always some dependence on the voltage, but it's usually very, very low. Of course, it depends on how it's been done and so on. Okay. Then some other applications or configurations. You could use these as phase splitters, meaning that when you do this amplifier, so that you have the input, you have certain sinusoidal signal coming in, and you have biased this circuit with this R1, R2, and also these Rs in a proper way, so that you are in a good operating point. But when you have this, so that the collector resistor and the emitter resistors are equal, then if you take the, you have two outputs for this amplifier or this system. It's not necessarily, well, you can think of it as an amplifier, but it doesn't matter. But however, you can get the so-called inverting output and non-inverting output. So basically you have two outputs which are essentially the same. So the amplitude is the same and so on. However, the phase is different. So you have 180 degrees difference in the phase between these two. So you can generate from the input signal, you can generate the input signal itself. So you can use it as a kind of a follower or unity gain buffer, or you can take a kind of inverting signal. So this is useful in some cases when you, if you would like to, for example, sum up signals or otherwise manipulate the signals in like make summations or subtractions of the signals. Of course, you need to know that the DC level of these two signals are not equal. So you have to take care of that with the AC coupling if you want to have them kind of equal, and you have to have some kind of leveling scheme after here, but the amplitudes are equal. Then one useful case is the voltage regulator that we already discussed earlier. In case of diodes, we had this Zener diode that we used. But if we now use the Zener diode in conjunction of a NPN transistor, we can get a better control on the voltage. So if we have this, so basically these two configurations here are exactly the same. So they are just drawn differently. So if you look at them carefully, what's the difference is that this transistor is just is rotated and lifted on the top, and so it's basically there's nothing else different. So the load, but however, the output of this load is now simply the center voltage minus the base to emitter voltage of the transistor. And well, the same way as field effect transistors, we can use these as logical switches, so on off. So if we want, it's not that usually like typically used bipolar transistors as switches, but it can be done. And the good thing is that typically these are somewhat faster, the bipolar transistors. But even that nowadays it's not kind of a high enough advantage to use them, but it can be done. So if we would consider this, so input signal, input voltage goes up. So we have high current or high level current in this respect, flowing to the base, depending on this RP value, that kind of opens this transistor. So there's current flowing from collector to emitter, and then we have a voltage drop from VCC to the saturation voltage. If we put high enough current through here, then this voltage, output voltage, goes down in the order of 0.2 volt, 0.3 volts. And then when we cut off the voltage, so we put zero here, there's no current. Then there in the base, there's no current in the collector, so there's no current through the RC, so the voltage at the output jumps back to the VCC. So that can be used as a logical switch. So it's a logical inverter. Okay, we came to the end of this chapter, which had there was a lot of things related to semiconductors in general. So these two chapters, so the MOSFET or the field effect transistor and this bipolar junction transistor chapters, those are the kind of the really the core of this course. So I urge you to kind of take your time and really go through them with care. And so the same way as the field effect transistors, the bipolar transistors are they can be used in analog and digital circuits. I would say that most typically the analog is the one for bipolar, but they are also used for digital circuits in a certain extent. But MOSFET is more common technology for digital applications. And well, you can consider bipolar transistors either voltage controlled or current controlled devices. So the base current is the key. So we have some base current flowing in, and that is turned into the collector current. So that's the key how it works. And we have a linear proportion between the base and the collector current. So that's the current gain of the transistor. And that's the key to all the kind of the starting point of the whole analysis. So the characteristics is described by the gain or the current gain or the transconductance. So depending on if you are thinking it as a current control device, then you are dealing with the current gain. And if you are thinking this as a voltage control device, then you need to go and check the transconductance. So how the base to emitter voltage is turned into the collector current. So this GM is the factor to get from voltage to current. And the same way as already discussed so many times, is that when we have this feedback resistor, so this RE in the emitter, we can get rid of the variability of the transistor characteristics. So the biasing point is more controlled, and also the voltage gain of the circuits, amplifier circuits, are more in control. The hindsight, the disadvantage is that with the feedback, we get control, but we need to give in the gain from the gain. So the voltage gain is reduced because of that. So most typical amplifier circuit is in common emitter configuration. So that's the kind of the mostly used configuration for amplifier, where the input is applied to the base and the output is taken from the collector. So that's the one that you should take your time and go through those examples and so on. Common collector circuits you can use as a buffer, so the unity gain buffer. So the input is, or the output is the same as input. But the good thing is that as buffers usually is that why would you use that is that you get high, you can make them as high input impedance or resistance and low output resistance, which makes kind of the goodness. So if you have a signal coming in from a sensor that is, and then you would like to just take that signal to the next stage, and so with the buffer you can kind of reduce the problems of attenuation from one point to another. Okay, I think that's it for the day and for this chapter. Next time we start a new chapter in this book. Are there any questions raised up at this moment? If not, then I thank you again, and we will continue on next Monday. Thank you.